G-38, Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. As soon as he stepped outside and rushed towards his car, Clark McCarthy stopped in his tracks in reaction to the closing of a nearby door. He looked around, unable to easily place the direction the sound had come from, given that he hadn't expected it and that his mind was so preoccupied. With help from a streetlight, he then saw a slight shadowy movement across the street. Within another second, he heard frantic footsteps, and within a few more, Mr. Byrd was clearly visible.
"I can't believe you left your car keys there again," Clark announced loudly, widening his eyes and glaring at Mr. Byrd to go along with the odd expression. "Get in, and you owe me for this."
When they were in Clark's car, Mr. Byrd congratulated him on the quick thinking. Avoiding any discussion of Phil's situation on the street was necessary, given the eternal likelihood that Secret Service agents were still guarding the area at President Slater's personal insistence, despite Clark's repeated requests for them to get out of town. Phil's characteristic instruction to keep the police out of it didn't explicitly extend to the Secret Service, but both Clark and Mr. Byrd knew him well enough to know that the implication was most decidedly there. After putting his key in the ignition, Clark paused.
"Shit,"
he cursed under his breath.
"Go,"
Mr. Byrd implored him. But rather than turn the key, Clark ran out of the car and into his own house. He made a beeline for Henry's room and shook him awake.
"What the hell?" Henry asked. "Clark, has something happened?"
"Sorry about this," Clark said, unceremoniously scooping Henry from his bed like a dead weight and placing him on his chair. "Phil's in trouble. Don't waste my time by interrupting or arguing with any of this, because you're not coming. But there's an intruder at the farm. I'm heading out with Byrd to take care of it, and I need you next door with Emma and Piper. They're fast asleep, and I know the agents will be lurking nearby, so there's no real threat of anyone intruding here, but you just never know. I don't want to leave them alone, but Phil is in trouble and he doesn't want the police involved. He said intruder, so there must only be one, and he must have spotted them. So I think he could be hiding. If the guy seems to be looking for something in particular, Phil might be lying low."
"Did he say Battenberg?" Henry asked.
"Yeah," Clark said. He hadn't wasted any time while explaining everything, but had rather kept talking as he pushed Henry's chair through the house and then next door. He arrived at Dan and Emma's very quickly and handed Henry his key.
"And we both know Phil would die before he gave the code word to anyone who tried to get it out of him, so this is real. Lock the door behind you, okay?"
The fury that had initially crossed Henry's face at having been manhandled without permission had faded almost instantly as Clark's explanation began, and his reply here came weakly.
"Okay. We'll be back soon."
"Just don't get yourself killed," Henry said.
Clark replied quickly.
100% record so far, Dad, and I've been in much bigger shitholes than Eastview."
Back in the car, Mr. Byrd was breathing heavily.
"At least you were quick," he said, "but for God's sake, go."
Clark didn't need this instruction by any means, but he fully understood Mr. Byrd's urgency and shared the feeling completely. As Clark pulled out of his driveway next door to the house he'd just vacated, naturally opting to talk as he drove rather than before setting off, Mr. Byrd produced his phone from his pocket and read a text that was identical to the one Clark had just received. The old man's voice was weak, as he then revealed that he'd been unable to sleep all night, sick with worry about not only Dan and Tara, but what might happen to Piper if they failed to find a solution to a problem the family thought had been decisively solved last time.
"One thing at a time," Clark said as calmly as he could. "Right now, the question in my mind is who else might have got this text. It's the exact same, so he clearly sent it to both of us at once. But who else? He wouldn't have sent it to my old man, not with the chair, and probably not anyway, since he never looks at his phone. But who can you think of that he might have sent it to as well as us? He said he couldn't call, but do you think he would totally rely on one of us two seeing a message at this time of night?"
"Who else does he have?"
Mr. Byrd asked, more than a little rhetorically.
"And just the same, who else does he trust?"
Clark had no answer to either of these questions, and on reflection he began to consider it likely that they probably were the only two people to have received any notice of the late-night intrusion. This was actually no bad thing in Clark's mind, however, as it meant that no other well-meaning individuals would arrive loudly enough to alert the intruder, and also that no one else could make the innocent but potentially costly mistake of involving the police. That particular instruction hadn't been issued as some defiantly anti-authority move from Phil, as Clark knew only too well, but more likely because Phil hoped they could deal with the uninvited visitor in a manner the police were legally prevented from doing so. The kind of person who would intrude on Phil Norris's farmhouse was not going to be a petty or opportunistic criminal, particularly on a night like this, when questions about the messengers and those most closely linked to them were on everyone's minds once more. Phil could quite understandably be viewed as the weakest link of those perceived to be anywhere near Dan's inner circle, living just outside of the often media-swamped and highly surveilled town of Birchwood as he did, and lacking the extensive security of the trusted group's other non-resident in the shape of Timo Fiore. If someone, or more likely some group, thought there was a secret known by everyone close to Dan, Clark saw very well why Phil might be the obvious target. As the car sped past the drive-in lot, from the edge of which several European news stations were currently shooting live broadcasts for their breakfast hours, Clark's greatest hope was that Phil's home was only being intruded upon by an individual attempting to plant bugs. This had infamously been done at his own home a few years earlier, and then at the homes of both the friendly newsman Trey Myers and more recently Alessandro Bonucci's parents. Even in their hyper-connected digital world, it seemed, physical bugging seemed to be a tactic that remained as popular as ever. If this was what was happening, Clark hoped to run into the asshole in question before he was finished. Phil's security system would hopefully gather enough footage to track the villain down, in any case, but that could take a spell of several days to which Clark McCarthy's patience simply didn't stretch. "What's the plan when we get there?" Mr. Bird asked after a few minutes of pensive silence and borderline irresponsible driving from Clark. The latter's defense, if his passenger had complained of the speed, would have been that the road was genuinely deserted at this time of night and that their situation was too urgent to care about arbitrary numbers on a dashboard, but Mr. Bird was fully on board and made no such complaint.
"It depends if there's another car," Clark replied. "If there is, we block its exit and go ahead on foot. You stay in the car."
"I didn't come out here to stay. Did I ask you a question?"
Clark interrupted so forcefully that Mr. Bird didn't say another word. Only another minute or so later, Clark took the almost invisible turnoff towards Stevenson Farm and dimmed the headlights while also slowing considerably. This was naturally frustrating since it increased the time it would take for him to reach the farmhouse, but it was necessary to minimize the chance of being heard. Phil's porch lights were on, illuminating the area sufficiently to reveal that only one car was present. His own. The recent erection of a chest-high wall meant that there was no longer any way for a vehicle to access the back of the property or reach either the woodland on one side or the cornfield on the other. So Clark wasn't merely guessing or assuming that no other car was present. As this fact became clear, Clark wasn't sure whether this was good or not. His initial involuntary reaction was one of relief that a physical confrontation with an individual who was almost certainly armed now seemed less likely than it would have if a vehicle had been present, but his subsequent conscious reaction was one of frustration that he might have been too late to catch the thief or bug layer in their cowardly act. Clark continued at the same slow pace for the remaining 15 seconds it took to reach the spot that was closest to the house without falling under the stealth killing glare of the porch lights. He was wary that an individual could still be present having arrived on foot, or perhaps an easily concealed motorcycle, so quietness was still in order. Although he didn't want to think about it, Clark was very aware of the possibility that Phil might have been detained in the time since sending his text message request for help, and that he was currently being held and questioned. If this was the case, spooking the culprit by making too much noise was the last thing Clark McCarthy wanted to do.
"Don't waste my time by interrupting or arguing.
Clark said, repeating to Mr. Bird a line he'd used on his father only minutes earlier.
But you're staying in the car, in the driver's seat, with the key in the ignition and your foot on the pedal. Nothing is going to go wrong, but if any time it even looks like it might, you get out of here and get back to Birchwood as quickly as you can. Understood? You stick around to be there for Piper like you are always there for us. You help my old man do whatever it takes to find the fuckers who did this, and when Tara gets back, you tell her I love her. Okay?
Mr. Bird exhaled slowly and nodded. Clark opened his door as quietly as possible and encouraged Mr. Bird to shift across the seats without stepping out.
But nothing is going to go wrong, Mr. Bird said.
Of course it's not.
Clark whispered in reply. He then pointed to his own chest as he prepared to sneak around the porch light and approach the house as furtively as possible.
100% survival record, Mr. Bird. 100%.